Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpoga, and this evening we'll talk about the plight of migrants from Africa to Europe. Thousands of African migrants have died trying to get into Europe. News stories of drownings and shipwrecks during hazardous sea journeys on the Mediterranean have become depressingly familiar. So, what, if anything, can be done to prevent such tragedies? With us tonight is my colleagues, Abdul Shakur Abold of VOA Swahili Service. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me once again.
You're welcome. And once again, we have another colleague, Vincent Makori, host of Africa 54.
Well, always a delight to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vincent. We also have Abdi Latif Egger. Abdi is a scholar and novelist. He joins us by phone from New York. Hello, Abdi. How is New York?
It's very cold.
Very cold. Same here. But welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, gentlemen, as I said, it's a dire situation, Vincent. It looks like a crisis now because despite many deaths on the Mediterranean, it's not seeming to ebb at all.
No. These reports are becoming, as you mentioned, actually depressingly frequent. We are constantly reporting about hundreds of people dying at sea. And many wonder, why do they keep going? Why do these people keep coming? And it tells you a story. I mean, there's a desperation, because we have all sorts of reasons why people are leaving, and despite the fact that some of those who are about to leave get to know that people have died, some are their brothers and relatives, they are still determined to go. They convince themselves that they are the ones who will make it, and they are the ones who will get to succeed once they get abroad. So it is a sad tale, and it is unfortunate that this is not being addressed, particularly on the continent of Africa itself. In fact, the Europeans are worrying more about this than the people who should be worrying and concerned about it, the African nations.
Abdul Shakur, somebody risks death to get to Europe.
Yeah, definitely, because when you look at it, the situation really is alarming, that the number of people who are risking their lives to go through. But you ask yourself, why should I risk my life? But you ask yourself, take example of Somalia, Eritrea, Ethiopia, where most of them also go through Yemen. And when you look at Mali and Nigeria, 50% of youth in Africa is the population said right now. But half of them don't have anything. They don't have any hope. They don't know what to do. They are in towns and cities and villages waiting for life, waiting for a job, waiting for school. So they say, I think my brother went to Europe. He's got a car, he's got a house, so I will do the same thing. So there is those reasons of looking for better life, looking for better living and better pastures, which is making people to go there. I think on the other hand is that there is no solution in Africa right now. African countries are not creating jobs to take this new young generation who are eager to go and look for a better life, eager to see that they get a job, and that's one of the reason why they're going.
Yeah, Abdi, so it's come to a point of whether you get a better life or die.
Well, I think, you know, this is something, as if we want to put it in context, is something that I think Africa has lost the battle in terms of propaganda. The youth have been propagandized by many media outlets and things like that in terms of understanding, a psychological understanding of where the best place in the world is to live. Africa has been beaten in that sense. They have not shown an equal ideal in terms of a golden standard of a nation. So everyone, I mean, it's not necessarily people who don't have jobs all the time who are running. I know people, for example, in Hargeisa who are probably the best, meaning that they have graduated, they have had local schooling, they have had the best opportunities compared to their other younger people who don't have that type of access. And still, they are making their way through the desert. So those are, you know, the thing has been, it's there's a Somali word for it that's called bufis, Boofis is a term meaning to be sprayed. It's sort of like what you use in insecticide or perfumes. The thing that is pushed out of a can, mm-hmm. it becomes a spray. Mm. So once you're sprayed with this bug called I want to leave, you know, you want to go.
Yes.
To these places that are the ideal place, and you know, I think the world has become, particularly after people have become what I would like to term national mercenaries.
I see.
They will go to the best country that they think is going to accommodate the ideal of how they should be paid.
I see, but Abidi, African societies, we pride ourselves on in regard to culture, family life, community in general. Where are our governments in all this? It's as if these people just
well,
come...
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that in the propaganda, in terms of, you know, not creating cultural activities, for example, movies and things like that, and how to encourage people and see how people are doing well in their own countries, you have consistently streaming these wonderful images of people, music, and all that, living very well in another country. And this is so. I'm trying to say that the war that has been lost in propaganda.
I see.
And you know, there's also the questions we have to address, for example, in terms of repression, things like that, and what has been said before, the actual very real questions of not having something to aspire to in locally.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, Douglas, I do agree with our colleague there in New York. It is a mind game, and this did not start today. If I may be a little bit radical, the narrative started many years ago, perhaps during colonialism or even after colonialism, where an African, whatever their circumstances and status, believes that everybody out there is better than them. Every country outside of the African continent is better than their country, whether it is economically, whether it is financially. Everybody on the continent of Africa tends to think that a person who lives in a Western nation, for example, or any other nation outside of the continent, has a better life. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how many times you tell somebody that it is not the case. It's not everybody in America who is wealthy. It's not everybody who lives in this part of the world lives in a secure neighborhood. It is a mind thing, a psychological thing, as he says. The war was lost a long time ago. But the efforts that would be made actually will be way far more than just having nice movies about an African city or about an African neighborhood. It has to come from the point of people changing their mindset, getting to understand that they're as decent as any other human beings and that they can make their own city, their own village, their own neighborhood as secure, as prosperous, and as respectable, just as any other part of the world.
I would like to say that, you know, the cultural work has been lost. And by saying cultural, I mean music, I mean all these things. Like we've had previously, we've had icons coming from the continent to visit other places, whether it is Fela, Franco, and all these people. It's not necessarily just an art thing, but what I'm trying to say, with the bombardment of Hollywood for so long, and culturally saying... For example, if you have the biggest people who are learned in a society also taking first in line to leave the country, that's a problem.
I see.
Where the doctor himself says, you know, where can I get paid the best?
Mm-hmm.
Not a question of, I don't agree that it was always the case. I think, for example, in the case of Obama's father, no matter what he had available here, he was, you know, his generation were able to go back.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think there's a difference in terms of the post-colony, the colony, and onward. But indeed, the battle is very you don't create something out of nothing. When you're African artists or you're people who are engaged in producing this cultural work, are not necessarily doing that, and they're not creating that type of idealism that you have within your own continent. So art has a very big part to play. I don't think any politician can say one day just wake up and say this is a good country. You know, it has to be something that, you know, is deeply felt within the subjects themselves.
I don't think so. I agree totally what you are saying, and with Vincent saying that it started long back before. But I think when it started before is totally different to what's happening today.
Yes.
Just as our colleague in New York explained, Obama's dad, they came here to study. But they had nationalism. There was a pull. Politicians say, we want to build Africa. It was a different period. It was different circumstances.
But,
today is totally different.
But you know, I'm sorry to interrupt, but those are men who came, they studied in the West, they went back, they were guaranteed jobs.
Yeah.
Most of the people who studied abroad at that time went home. They're the ones who actually took over the plum jobs in the government. But today, even if a young fellow comes to this country, many of them will say, well, why would I go back home? I will never find a job.
But let me, they stay it came to the same point.
I think to limit everything to a job.
No, it's not only a job. I don't think so. You said...
I think this is a big issue because I don't... You know what? I think there's really... for example, a doctor who's... a doctor in Ethiopia, for example, is somebody the government pays money to learn and become a doctor. The first thing, and a lot of them want to do, is not everybody, a lot of them want to do, is leave after that investment from the community.
But I find it interesting, gentlemen, sorry to interrupt.
Able to find a job, but it's not the kind of job that they want. What I mean is that this is where the gold standard of a nation state comes into play.
Yeah, but gentlemen,
whatever you're given in Addis Ababa is not enough for you.
Yes, but gentlemen, there's something also curious which I fail to understand. As you mentioned, there have been trends in the 60s, and people would come to study and go back and sort of build the country, so to speak. Now, I find it curious, some governments actually now are encouraging their people to go. In a country like Uganda, for instance, recently, they want to export doctors and health workers to some islands in the Caribbean. And they don't have that doctor patient ratio is alarming.
Yes, because they are not willing to not only invest in educating their people, they're not willing to pay them a good salaries that will enable the people to live a good life. But again, the other thing is that these politicians, out of selfishness, they want these people who are more educated
to go away
so they can have a free hand in sharing and enjoying the wealth of the nation without interference from the elite of the community.
But now we are talking, we have to distinguish between the two things. Hold on, Abidi.
I think we have to distinguish between the two things here we're talking about. When you're talking of a doctor and experts who are leaving the country compared to those who are taking the boat and going through the Lampedusa and Malta and all this, we have two categories of people.
Yeah.
Those who are educated.
We're trying to say is that imagine the person who has the best facility in the country is also running away.
Yeah, exactly. But I agree. That's what I'm saying. Everybody is running away because one major thing we must all agree about is that, as you said earlier, there is no more a nation. You don't have that nationalism that my country first. Look at even the athletes who are running for Kenya. They come here and they run for American papers or Swedish or whatever. They just want where the money is. People are going for where the money is. And let's not forget, it's not only Africa. We have Asia also. Australia is suffering. The Indonesians, they're also running away to Australia. The Middle East are running away. So it's an issue of looking for a better life, I think, much more. Because
I understand, but I think what has to be troubled is that idea of a better life.
Yeah.
You know, this idea, feeding the idea of a better life is in the United States or in the West, is problematic.
You see, it is.
This is what we don't need to reiterate. Even in this program, we need to understand that, look, we have a concept of what a good living is, but we're not willing to struggle for it like others did in our previous generation, to live and work for it within a community, within a place where you actually acknowledge for it. The difference between being, for example, in your home country and over here, one of the biggest things is the sense of community. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, continue. Continue, people.
Okay, well, gentlemen, I request you hold your thoughts. We take a short break and we'll be back to continue our discussion of the plight of migrants from Africa to Europe.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the plight of migrants from Africa to Europe. Our panelists are my colleagues, Abdul Shakur Abud of VOA Swahili Service and Vincent Makori, host of VOA's Africa 54. And we have our Abdi Latif Ega, who is joining us from New York. He's a Somali scholar and novelist. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9. Gentlemen, before we broke off for that brief break, some people have argued that if the case is that Africans are looking for better life in Europe and North America and elsewhere, Africa is not one country. There are countries in Africa that are doing fine. Why are they, for instance, running away from Niger to South Africa, for instance?
Where life is better? This is the point. There are some who cross from one country to the other. But I think I still go back to what I said. It is this mind thing where people have grown, not only, as Abud said, not only in Africa, but even in other parts of the world, where you get to believe that the rest of the world, especially the West, is always better than Africa. There are people who think the West is just better. That's all. And they've grown to internalize that. Mm-hmm. They don't care to know what they're going to find over there. Mm-hmm. All they want is go.
Okay.
I want to
but
go
up. I don't think so only that. I think
there's a mechanism behind it. I mean, if you watch, for example, who and what it is that is pushed in terms of the world media and the cycles, remember that we are actually consuming a lot of the media from the West. So, you know, it's not something, you know, far-fetched when you're bombarded with these movies, education systems, and all this wherewithal. Where, for example, all the people who are rewarded because of getting an education, a Western one, whether it is local or international. So it's not far-fetched for people to think it's better out there. It's just that we're reaching now proportions where it's become almost reaching a situation where it is bizarre, you know, and tragic in many ways, where you have thousands of people migrating regardless of the danger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's also a population thing. Yeah. The more the populations of countries increase, the more you have more poor people, more jobless young people. Of course, there will be more and more trying to get away from their countries so that they can find a better life elsewhere. So I think there's also a population thing.
It's a population thing. And another thing is that one should look into it is that we have this example. Those who have come to the West, like us, we have succeeded. And when you go home, even if you say it's a propaganda, I go home, I reach home, I send money home, I build a house and everything. So people are looking at that too. It's not only the Western media and the Western culture which is facing that. I think so. It's a lot of things which is combined. I'll take an example like in Comoro, for example.
This is not the Africa of the 70s or whatever. We have people now, any village you go to, they have CNN and other things streaming live 24 hours, you know. This is not, people are in close touch with each other. So, I'm not saying that this is the only thing, but it is a very significant part where we have to, I think now maybe we should discuss perhaps how we might offer some situations where we can perhaps think of better ways of dealing with this.
Okay. Yeah, I totally agree with you that it's a significant part, but I think there's a lot of other dynamics which is playing around. I'll give an example. There are two good examples that I give, Cape Verde and Comoro. You have a lot of people dying crossing the islands of Comoro to Mayotte. They're going only to Mayotte, which is not Europe, but there, Mayotte is part of France, but the salary there, the money there is bigger than what people are getting in Comoro. But people are taking the same boats and dying and going over there. So they're looking for a better job or better life over there.
And then on the other hand, clearly, in Cape Verde, Abdi, for example, the continent is one of the richest ones in the world. It has, you know, underachieved in its own way to its potential. So in the idea of looking, one has to understand that if you look within your own continent itself, which is one of the richest, you can come up with something.
But Abdi, I think one has to be convinced thoroughly that actually what I can find here is as good as what I can find elsewhere.
I have met people.
So Abdi, when
you have the most important, you know, the most educated, considering themselves as a sort of part of a market, meaning that, you know, I am a doctor, so I'm worth that much. Mm-hmm. So I can only get that much if I come to Los Angeles.
Yeah, but also, you know, Abdi, there are people who have told me that while they're willing to stay home and make a better life, mm-hmm. they encounter all these sources of frustration, including corruption and nepotism, political systems which only favor those who are in power. So a person feels that in as much as I love my country, I want to build my country, I want to do a lot in my country with all the kind of education I've acquired, I am not as appreciated as long as I'm not from the favored ethnic group. So I want to go somewhere where I can get
that. That is true in many cases, but those are the exceptions. You know?
So, gentlemen,
what we're dealing with here is the ideal. What is the ideal? Because I know a lot of people from the continent, from various places, who are pretty much very, very sober about what it is they want, which is the best salary they can get. And where they get it from, they don't care.
So, gentlemen, as we went, they were running out of time. Briefly, starting with Abu Chakur here, it seems, are you letting the governments off the hook? Because other people have argued all this is primarily the lack of those governments, those people in power in Africa, failing to develop the continent, their own countries, and making conditions conducive for their people to stay there.
I totally agree with you. I just came from Equatorial Guinea. The president has spent a lot of money on infrastructure and housing. But the housing people are not going in because of a corruption system, and people are not being able to go into the houses they cannot afford. So it's more than just the government doing something. It's a whole system once again. The government are responsible. They have allowed that the infrastructure does not exist anymore. There's no hospitals. There's no good schools. There's no industry where people can remain and be attracted. You look into one other situation when I was talking about Cape Verde. They have built new houses, new development, new infrastructure. But people are all abroad. You go to Cape Verde, the islands are empty, the houses are empty, the buildings are empty. So you have a challenge here. What to be done? What can the government do? And I think it's a whole set of mindset to be changed. As Vincent said, it's infrastructure, it's planning, it's a lot of things together to make
people... So Vincent, how much can the rest of the world take?
Well, the world cannot take everybody from Africa. And what you're going to have is a bunch of people from Africa who end up in the West living in poverty and having more misery than they had back home. But the countries in Africa, the African countries, have to find a way of developing, of eliminating poverty, of creating an environment where people feel appreciated in their own countries. And you know, I can give a small example here. How do you explain that people migrate, for example, from rural areas to urban areas to live in slums? Why? Because the rest of the country is neglected by the central government. There's poverty, then there's no hospital there. What do people think? The capital city must be offering better things. Some of them arrive there and find that they live in slums, in poverty, in squalor. The same way, as long as the African countries do not create those environments, everybody, educated, uneducated, will leave the continent and go abroad.
So, Abdi, as we conclude, Africa is losing.
I think we need to come up with our own perspective. Their mantra of saying, you know, it's only jobs and it's only this and it's only that, it goes without saying. These are things that are needed. But I think that time and time again, the people who are thinking and the thinkers of it are usually repeating mantras from the development industry, or whether it's a journalist or whatever. I think that we really need to capture the hearts and minds in terms of what it is that is available in the continent. We are people who are full of resources. We are very resourceful people. We have a burgeoning young population. All these are pluses. We have resources. These are things that are things. I agree in many ways with all the panelists in what they've identified. But I think a step further is to understand that the cultural war is one that has been won. Like when somebody thinks of it as a better place, it means that he has been convinced somehow that it is.
I see.
So
what to do? What is there to do? What can we do to reach, to change that mindset?
Let me just finish one part. Mm-hmm. We know from the post-colony till now that our leadership has been very adept and extremely well, well positioned to basically chase all of their citizens. Mm-hmm. This is one thing they're all experts at.
Yes.
You know, yeah. This is what we've seen from the time of Carter until now. If you go to Washington, see where you live, most of the people are generationally coming in different ways, running from different.
So very briefly, I think we agree the consensus is to have a mindset change where people can have a love for their nation and feel that they can find the best in their own countries.
I agree with that.
I think, and a lot of people are not necessarily predisposed for a struggle.
Struggle is not there because we need patriotic leadership.
And I'm looking at it in a ways where we're utilitarian. I have a degree, I need this much.
I see.
Yeah, that's definitely the reason, but I think more that leaders of Africa and countries have to have a plan and be like just America. An American says, my flag, I defend it. We need Africans to say, I defend the African flag, and that's what we want to do.
The leaders have to stop acting like masters.
Interestingly, as Africans flee their continent, there's an influx of Chinese coming in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's another problem.
They see the opportunities that we don't see. Exactly. So
they're taking the empty space we don't see. But then even then, we should not forget that the Africans going to the West are creating extremism of the rights. That's another problem also. The right wings in Europe are taking over. So it's a world dynamic. Yeah. I was in Equatorial Guinea. All the shops, all the businesses are run by Chinese.
Yes.
And Africans are in the slums and they're living there.
And figuring out a way of getting to Europe.
Because somebody told us the best is in the West.
When we talk of Kenya now with the immigration, migration of digital and from analog, the biggest company which has taken over is a Chinese company.
Yeah.
And the others, they were sleeping, waiting to prepare their own plan when the Chinese came on the table with the big plan.
Yeah,
that's another problem.
The other day I read that they had offered some oil deal or refinery construction to a Russian company.
Yeah.
African companies could do that and they could create jobs and then the people's welfare would improve. But we are out of time now and I hope this discussion will continue. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague Abdushakur Aboud of VOA Swahili Service and another colleague, Vincent Makori, host of VOA's Africa 54. Thanks very much, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Abdi.
Thank all of you for being. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our producer has been Jackson Mvunganyi and engineer was Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still listen to it. All you have to do is go to our main website at www.vnews.com. Click on programs, scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you have the whole program there. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.
Le Monde Aujourd'hui sur VOA Afrique.